Chapter 18, How to Succeed at Business Failure. We are social media driven, not just personally, but also in the way our business lives are dependent on it. This is why so many people are failing in their professional lives. They bring bad habits, bad taste, and bad behavior in the way they conduct their business online. I cannot help but judge us for it. We do so many things that deserve epic side eye, and we wonder why we cannot prosper. What are those things? Let's talk about four of them. One. You are using Comic Sans font. Just like clothes, fonts speak for you. Some are serious, some are more casual, some are classic, and others are clown suits. The leader of that pack is Comic Sans. Comic Sans is a font that is a joke all the way through. In fact, the person who created it never meant for it to be used for anything besides the software he was testing it for. Somehow, the fonts ended up in Microsoft Word, and on that day, the world was cursed with a typeface that is not only terrible, but persistent. It is the Visa of fonts, except it's everywhere I never want to be. At best, it is appropriate for, well, comics. Refer yourself to the name. It is for things we're supposed to laugh at on a very basic level. It can also signal things that are supposed to be for children, like their party invitations. That is it, people. That is all. Somehow, people think the font is cute and friendly, but what it really is childish and not appropriate for adult business. Government agencies use Comic Sans sometimes. Sure, our various bureaucracies are an everlasting joke. But they don't have to laugh at us with their font, too. That's just rude. I fear that there's a tombstone somewhere with Comic Sans engraven. How is a person supposed to rest peacefully forever like that? I've seen churches, hospitals, and police departments use this font, and I want to write them strongly worded letters of disappointment. Putting serious messages in Comic Sans is like dropping bad news and then saying LOL afterwards. It does not compute, nor does it make sense. Comic Sans should not be used for anything business-related or anything you want people to take seriously. Ever, never, ever. As a professional, you should know that I cannot think that you're all that gathered if you're using a typeface meant for children. If I see that font in an email, I might think you're joking and refuse to respond. The use of Comic Sans is usually accompanied by text of varying colors because one bad decision begets another. I found some old posts I wrote in 2003, and they were in Comic Sans font. That should tell you how terrible they were. Who do we need to petition to make them remove Comic Sans from every piece of software? Can we go to Congress and ask for a policy change? Is there a campaign we can run to ensure the extinction of this awful piece of type? Something gotta be done. Basically, if Comic Sans was a person, it'd be the dude who wears baseball caps backwards, raises the roof at the party unironically, and tells bad jokes only he laughs at, and describes himself as really chill because he tries very hard to be cool, but really he's 40, lives with his mom, and doesn't have any plans to do better. He's a great babysitter and kids love him, but is that the dude you want to represent your business at an important conference? No, because he's immature, nice, but not appropriate. Stop using Comic Sans for business, everyone, please. For the love of all that is good and professional, stop. Today. Immediately. Thank you. Number 2. You still use an AOL or Hotmail account for work purposes. Everyone remembers their first email address. Mine was something whack like vetvet@hotmail.com. I was 14, so don't judge me too hard. Either way, in the 90s, AOL and Hotmail were the places to be in these internet streets. All we were doing was chatting anyway. Then the internet grew up, and we did too, and we went off to college. Some of us started working, and then Gmail happened because Google launched their plan to control us all. They did it so right, too, and we were able to get rid of our too cute to be stressed at AOL email accounts. Now we could get firstname.lastname@gmail.com. Some of us kept those old accounts to use as our junk email receptacles. When you sign up for sweepstakes or fantasy football leagues, odds are you do so using your AOL, Yahoo, and Hotmail accounts. That is perfectly fine. If you're still using AOL or Hotmail as your main email or business email account, I'm not sure I can do business with you because you seem like a member of Team Bad Decisions. How can I trust your business acumen when you haven't even upgraded your email life since 2001? How can I know that you'll be on top of things when your online moniker is the equivalent of wearing platforms with goldfish in the soles? You're living in the digital 70s, and we must bring you up to date. Odds are you also use Internet Explorer 6, and your website was built on GeoCities, and you think glitter wallpaper is still all the rage. I got a business email from someone with an AOL account, and it automatically went to spam. I only found it in my spam folder after the person followed up by text when I didn't respond. It was like my inbox was so offended, it didn't even want me to see the message. If this were basketball, my email client blocked their shot across the court and then wagged his finger in his face on some nope. Word to Dikembe Mutombo. All I could do was look at this person sideways because I thought they were better than that. To this day, I'm not even sure I did reply to their email. I'm scared that whatever their inbox had is contagious. Get an email address with an ending that is either gmail.com or your own domain name, or even get one of those @me.com email addresses. There are so many more professional options that there is no excuse for not letting these old addresses die hard. Number 3, you annoy everyone with your marketing. Everyone is more accessible than ever now that we're spending multiple hours online every day. This is great for businesses because we can reach people 24/7. However, marketing is not about harassing everyone to be your customer, client, or reader. Good marketing is when you know who would be interested in your product and you find ways to get them to pay attention. It doesn't mean beating everyone on your friends list over the head with your event, sale, or article. It just does not. Think of the internet and your friends, followers, and fans as one big conference room. When you do that, you will understand what behaviors are appropriate and what stuff will make people report you as spam. You should conduct yourself as you would if you walked into a professional event where there are some people you're familiar with in varying degrees and some you do not know at all. Your friends list is full of people who want to support you, but do not take advantage of them by attaching yourself to their e-ankles and trying to use them as your sole customer base. If you're a club promoter and you're hosting an event, please know which of your friends actually live in your city. Do not send folks in New York an invitation to an event happening in LA. It's lazy to select all instead of taking the time to go through your friends list and geo-target your message. Also, I know we've known each other since college, but I'm not coming to any party described as grown and sexy. Any event where that phrase grown and sexy is on the flyer is guaranteed to be full of immature behavior from people with obligations they refuse to acknowledge. You know good and damn well that when you go to grown and sexy night at the club, someone's shoes are going to get stepped on and it'll turn into an all-out brawl. No thanks. I'll be at home on my couch, binge-watching my favorite 90s shows and eating all the snacks. Furthermore, do not drop your flyers on people's Facebook walls. That's like placing one of your stickers on my car. This is my e-property, and you will not use it to promote your shenanigans. That's rude as hell. Learn some etiquette about you, because all this will do is get your post deleted, and you might end up on my persona non grata list. Similarly, do not tag people to your event flyer so it shows up in their photos. And if you have anything in Comic Sans on that flyer, your event has already failed before it's begun. I'm not coming, and I'll be judging people who do. I love my fellow writers, and I get that we need people to read our words, but one thing I hate is people posting a piece and tagging 55 of their friends to it. This is like going up to 55 people, tapping their shoulders and saying, "Hey, read what I wrote." That's not cute. First of all, again, our friends can support our work, but they are not obligated to. When we do the tagging thing, we're basically pulling them into a crowded room and interrogating them about whether or not they've seen what we did. Don't put folks in that position. If you're in their social media family, trust that they will see it. And in case you really want that person to read what you wrote, send them a message and say, "Hey, it'd mean a lot if you read this." But do not tag 5011 people to your writing. It's pushy and annoying. But there are a few things that make me blow smoke out my ears more than the folks who take to Twitter to publicize their work in all types of wrong ways. They're like the people who are notorious for tweeting random people with "follow me back." Never in the history of ever have I been compelled to follow someone who thinks the way they should get more people in their e-lives is by demanding it. These are the people who walked into the conference room with their business card in the air and say, "Hey, call me." First of all, are you talking to me? Second, don't yell at me. Third, and most important, who the hell are you? You didn't even introduce yourself or nothing. You just rolled up and told a stranger to follow you. And for the people with mixtapes who send me links on Twitter, I do not work in A&R. I don't work for anybody's record label, and I really don't care about your music. Can you not? How about you don't? My iTunes is still mostly 90s R&B, so unless you're sending me a link to Brandy's discography, I do not want. Don't spam me, bro. I don't know why this is such a thing. Is someone advising people that tweeting 100 random strangers links to your music is effective promotion? It's like handing a stranger on the street your CD. If you're reading this in the future, there were optical discs with music on them. Why should they have any damns to give about what you just gave them? Every time a rapper tweets me his mixtape link, an angel loses her ability to do the Running Man correctly. Save the angels. Follow me on Twitter, though, @Lovey. Number 4, you call yourself a visionary or something equally pompous. We should all think very highly of ourselves. Confidence will take you far because thinking you're an awesome person allows you to dream bigger, want more, and expect great things from yourself. However, there's a thin line between healthy self-worth and arrogance, aka the Kanye West syndrome. On our social media accounts, we have to define our entire selves in the small pockets of digital space. How do you tell people who you are and what you do in these short bios? Well, one way is to use terms that are loaded with symbolism so people can picture what you do. But you can take it too far by using grandiose adjectives and referring to yourself as all types of monumental nouns. Some of us append these major titles to ourselves, and I scratch my head wondering if they're just using an invisible sarcasm font, because surely they cannot be serious. So you're the chief executive, president, CEO, director, visionary, trailblazer at your company, huh? Yes, here I am, still not knowing what the hell you do, Tommy. If you are calling yourself a trailblazer, I hope your job is to literally set grass and wildlife on fire to make running paths. Do you work for Runyon Canyon Park? If not, that's pretty presumptuous of you. Why are you calling yourself a visionary on LinkedIn? What does it mean? You say it means you come up with great ideas. Well, can you execute them? Because if all you have is a notebook in your house full of genius things you've never done, you should delete your profile entirely. Ascribing that word to yourself really raises the bar too high, and you're coming out of the gate overpromising. People will expect the world and then some from you. Isn't that a lot of pressure to put on yourself? Also, the word is pretty meaningless to use on a resume or a site that's supposed to be your portfolio. Let me search for visionary on LinkedIn, said nobody ever. If actions speak louder than words, some of us are trying to shout into a megaphone instead of doing the work that will make others shout on our behalf. I read some folks' self-written bios and wonder if they also invented the internet and solved world hunger. If you're constantly reminding people of how much of a boss or guru or expert you are, you're probably overcompensating. Those descriptions are supposed to be used about you. They're words for other people to bestow on you. There's a difference between owning your awesome and whatever this inflated title thing that's happening is. I'm not saying that people should be overhumble and downplay their talents. Own your dopeness. However, that dopeness does not need to be spelled out as a tattoo on your forehead or in a fake title on your LinkedIn bio. Let your work speak for you, and someday, people might call you the highborn leader of all things in your industry. All that said, I will call myself an expert at the art of side-eye. I'm also a guru of rice eating. I think I want to add Grand Wizard of Everything to my About Me page. I am the CEO, President, Grand Goon, and Executive Director of Awesomely Lovey. Over there, I'm an expert at writing in random slang and the Maharishi of wig snatching. You will deal.